This is On Target St. John's, a look at politics, crime, education, what's happening here with the people who know. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Good afternoon, everyone. Linda Swain broadcasting to you from the dining room of my home, as I have been for the last couple of weeks now. And on the line with us today, we have Memorial University economist Dr. Wade Locke. Hello.
Good afternoon.
So these are really challenging times, there is no doubt. First time we've had to deal with a pandemic like this in many of our living memory. Everything has changed dramatically. We've seen now the first death in Newfoundland and Labrador related to COVID-19, and our deepest condolences go out to the family and friends of that gentleman. It's fair to say that absolutely everything has changed. What will be some of the major economic impacts of COVID-19 on Newfoundland and Labrador?
Well, let's just say first, this is a horrible situation to be in, independent of what's going to happen to the economy, and it is difficult for everybody here, and we appreciate the guidance and leadership that the officials and government are providing to us. That being said, the economy is in a difficult situation. Before this happened, we had a fiscal problem, and what's gone on now will have magnified that problem. So the kind of things we would expect to see happening, or we are seeing happening, is that one of the major revenue generators for the province is oil revenue. And that's tied to a couple of things, or several things, but one of the things will be price, one will be production, and one would be exchange rates. The price right now has fallen from their estimate in the budget of $65 down to below $25 or so. So it's or certainly below 30 anyway. It's a major change. And a number of the royalties we have in place are sensitive to price. So, for example, part of the Hibernia royalty doesn't kick in if the price is below $50. For example, part of the White Rose royalties only kick in after $50. Part of the Hebron royalties only kick in after $50. So it's not simply a matter of taking the numbers in the budget and scaling them down. You're looking at probably $600 or $700 million difference in provincial revenue should prices stay where they're at now. That's a problem for us. We're looking at the kinds of royalty numbers that were on the go in 2008 when we fell from about 2.3 down to about $500 million. It is significant. If that were the only thing going on, then that might be manageable. I don't know if it would or not, but it would be difficult. You've got as well, people are having forced to stay home because of the virus and not interact, and therefore there's less work going on. There is less tourism and service industry going on as a result of this particular activity. And on top of that, the stock market has fallen dramatically, and that will have implications for the unfunded liability. And then on top of that, we had a fiscal situation it was difficult to deal with in the first place, and this makes it untenable, I think. So I think it is hard to talk about these kind of things in the current environment when people are concerned about their health and their well-being. This is a situation that we're going to have to come to grips with once this is all over, and it is likely that there'll be a long time before the things that we thought were normal before come back to anywhere close to that. You know, oil prices will come back, the stock market will come back, people will travel again, but right now we don't even know when this is going to be over, and so there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of fear, there's a lot of anxiety, and the economy is reflecting that. You know, even though the government, both provincial and federal, are doing the best they can to mitigate, minimize, the significance of the virus on economic activity. They can't mitigate against all risk. And while people will now realize that we have a risk here in terms of travel, and they might have had that in the back of their mind before, but certainly now the cost of travel and insurance and those kind of things will go up because now we have a realized risk that people can relate to, and it will reduce the amount of travel, which will have implications for tourism in the future. We will see some businesses that were hurt previously in this province by the state of emergency and snow and generally a bad time period will be made worse as a result of this year. So I would suspect there'll be some businesses won't survive. It will create financial and economic difficulty for families, which it is. And to the extent the government support and programs they've announced will help. It probably won't completely eliminate some of the negative consequences for the families. Sometimes it's not fun being an economist. We're called the dismal scientists for a reason, and this is one of those times. So let me just say one further thing before you ask questions. I don't think that we can, from an economic perspective, fiscal perspective, survive this without help from the federal government. I have been an advocate of trying to get your expenditure under control for a period of time now. What I would say to you is that in the next 2 or 3 years, they ought not to be changing anything and get support from the federal government. So if Mr. Osborne today, when he talks to Mr. Morneau, can get the federal government to buy into support for the support for Newfoundland, he should do that. I don't know how we can do it without that support. I don't think anything should be done within the next 2 or 3 years in terms of trying to control expenditure. I think that we need to try to deal with the situation now we have it in our, on our plates. And after that period of time, whoever's in government, they should form some kind of task force where people can legitimately think about how we get ourselves in a situation and how we get ourselves out of this situation for us to get a balanced budget back in place and then deal with the real fiscal problems we have in this economy. Because our ability to adjust to the situation we find ourselves in as a result of the virus is significantly impaired by the fiscal problem we found ourselves in before the virus came into effect. We're lucky in a sense that everybody understands that's a problem that they can't let people try to deal with on their own. That's why the government are providing support. That's why the Bank of Canada is providing support. So, you know, it is a difficult, difficult situation, and there's no positive spin that we can put on that.
Memorial University economist Dr. Wade Locke is my guest today on Target St. John's. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back, VOCM on Target. I'm Linda Swain. My guest today is Memorial University economist Dr. Wade Locke. And he gave us a very sobering assessment of what the economic impact of COVID-19 is having on this province. And Dr. Locke, we're all focused right now on flattening the curve and controlling the spread, and rightfully so. But what kind of a response is going to be needed to address the economic impacts once the health concerns are adequately addressed?
Well, it's not clear what else we can do given the situation. The biggest problem right now from an economics perspective is we don't know when this will be over. So the reaction you're seeing in the stock market and partly in the oil prices is that a couple of things are going on, right? I mean, in the stock market, there is people do understand that there's a lower demand for products, and there's uncertainty. So the first step you want to do is figure out how you get more certainty in terms of when this will be over, and that's part and parcel of the experts who are health epidemiologists, et cetera, who can give you some sense of if you do what you're supposed to do in terms of staying home and self-isolating or avoiding social contact, it is more likely that you, as you said, flatten the curve and reduce the significance of this particular virus on everybody. And until that happens, it's hard to know exactly what will happen in terms of the economy, because people are not going to go back to work and should not go back to work unless this is resolved, because this is a serious virus that's causing a lot of problems, it's causing a lot of anxiety, et cetera. So at some point, it'll become clearer about when the cycle will have completed itself and whether or not they find some kind of vaccine or some kind of medication to deal with the effects of the virus on people. But right now, that's not there. That's not a realm of uncertainty. There's less travel going on now, and that reduces the demand for oil, which has a direct bearing on price, as well as what's going on in the Middle East and Russia, but that has a direct bearing on price as well. People are not socializing in large part of this economy, and like most economies, are the service sector. And so to the extent that people are worried about going outside their door and shouldn't go outside their door unless there's a reason for doing so, it will have dramatic and negative implications for the economy and for a period of time to come. And when that's all over, you're likely to see changes in people's behavior about what they found acceptable or normal or were willing to do in the past. So you might see, and you're likely to see, a change in people's behavior with respect to tourism and flying. Because whether you realize it before or not, there's always the possibility that you might find yourself in a situation where you can be stuck somewhere because of the impact of a virus or some other kind of pandemic in the future. And at the very minimum, it will cost you more in terms of insurance to travel, so I would suspect it'd be less travel. That will have dramatic and significant implications for us here. And until we come back to some kind of normalcy, which is why the government has put the measures in place that they have to try to keep people employed, keep things going as much as they can without exposing themselves to ourselves to overly strong risk, then we're going to be a long ways from recovery. And when we get back to what is people consider somewhat of normalcy, it'll take a long period of time before we start to see more hope, more positive outlooks for the economy here as well. And, you know, it's not like we were doing great before. We had fiscal problems before that. We were hoping, a bound hope, that oil would come along and save us. Now we've seen that the White Rose extension has been delayed, at least for now, and the Beta Nord proposal has been put on hold for a period of time. Hopefully they come back and come back relatively quickly, but there's no guarantee of that. And we saw today, I think it was today, that the refinery is going into a shutdown or an idling. And none of those things are good for the economy. And once they go into those kinds of effects, it takes a while for it to come back. So I don't know what else we could be doing other than what we're doing right now, which is trying to help people cope in the short term as much as they can with the real economic effects of this particular problem.
Dr. Wade Locke, you indicated in the first segment that we won't be able to survive without the federal government. What's your assessment of Ottawa's response to date?
Well, the problem you have, I think the federal government response in general, which I guess is part of your question, has been positive in the sense that I don't know what else they could do other than what they've done. I mean, there are some other things they could do in terms of rent and things like that, but for the most part, they've done as much as they can do. They can't protect every business against every possible eventuality that may be somehow tied to the COVID-19 virus. What they can do is try to minimize the implication of the risk to the great majority of people and great majority of businesses by giving people an incentive, like the 75% wage subsidy, to continue on with your employees, right? So I think that is good. The problem for all of this stuff is that they have put a lot of money into the economy, and they have provided a lot of credit. At some point, when the economy starts to recover, that will have implications for a number of things, right? And it'll have implications for inflation, it'll have implications for the value of the dollar, et cetera. And you've got the U.S. down there who are not doing as well either, right? So there's a number of factors that are going to linger for a long period of time. And I don't know what else you could do if you're a government than what they've done at this point in time. With respect to dealing with Newfoundland's unique problems, and they are unique in the sense that we have a large amount of revenue, or certainly before this crisis, we had a large amount of revenue in per capita terms, but we also had a fiscal problem that was big in relation to every other province as well. And so that had to be dealt with at some point. So we are sort of hoping that either the federal government will come along like they did with the 2019 Accord agreement and give us another $2.5 billion, or oil would make the difference here and we could put off dealing with the real problems until later on. I don't think we can realistically use that as an operating strategy on a go-forward basis. I would say to you in the first couple of years, or 2 or 3 years after this is over, that we ought not to do anything dramatic either, because the economy is weak now, and if you do anything too dramatic, it will have a very negative impact on businesses and people, more so than you need to. We're just going to have to live with the fact that our debt's going to go up, and I don't think that the province is in a position on its own to be able to survive this year. We were sort of okay before, in a sense, being able to do it if we made a decision to do it. I don't think there's any decision we can make now that will allow us to be able to deal with the real fiscal problem we have. We're going to need support from the federal government. I don't see any way out of that at this point in time. And that's not been something I would advocate or had been advocating up to this point in time. Your phone call made me think about what is realistic to do. And I think we're looking at probably a 10-year problem that we have to deal with over that period of time. First 2 or 3 years, just deal with the situation, minimize the significance of the downturn in the economy, and then after that, put a plan in place, a real plan in place, not a political plan. Go ahead.
Sorry, what kind of a position were we in prior to this?
Well, we had the highest per capita expenditure in the country. We had the highest per capita debt. We were running huge deficits. And if it wasn't for the 2019 $2.5 billion from the Atlantic Accord, we would have had a huge deficit this year as well. We had a deficit that's recorded for accounting purposes on accrual basis because of the $2.5 billion was added to it, and we still had a deficit somewhere in the range of, I'm just trying to think what the number was now. It was 1.6 or something like that. Was that the number? Yeah, it's 1.6 in the update, right? So we had 2.5, and then we ended up with a 2.5 additional revenue from the federal government that we counted now, even though it's coming in the future. And we still ended up with a surplus of 1.6, right? So if it wasn't that, we would have had quite the deficit, right?
Dr. Wade Locke, Memorial University economist, is my guest today on Target St. John's. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And our guest today on the phone is Memorial University economist Dr. Wade Locke, and we've been talking a little bit about the economic impacts of COVID-19, and hard to really know what the full impact is going to be, because right now we're all very much focused on trying to defeat this virus. But when the economy rebounds, what is it going to look like?
Sorry, you asked me that question? Okay. We will see some things that we normally accepted as standard practice different. I suspect that you will see people change their behavior with respect to where they're willing to travel, how much they're willing to travel. You will see a long time before the price of oil climbs back up in a long period of time. You will see the impact of the stock market on people's wealth, and you may see some people being forced into a situation where they may delay the retirement for a year or two to try to deal with the situation. These things will come back. I mean, all these things will come back in some form or another, just a matter of how long it takes to come back. I would suspect things that we accepted before in terms of socializing and going out and shaking hands and doing all those kind of things, that may be a little different for people now, because in the back of their mind, there will be these kinds of risks associated with that kind of behavior. It's, we will have a similar kind of economy at some point in time, and it may take a few years for us to be back the way it was before, similar to what we had before. We will remain dependent upon oil. There will be, the tourism sector will be an important sector. The government will still be an important part of the economy, provincial and federal, here in this particular province. And we would see, we'll have very much the same thing in terms of seasonal industries. And there will always be the glimmer of hope that we have the ability to grow the technology sector or some other next silver bullet to move us along the way. But I don't expect to see much in the way of differences. It's just a matter of how long it takes to get back to something that looks reasonably what it was before the COVID virus came about. Like I said,
are there any jurisdictions that are better poised than others in weathering this storm?
I would say everyone except ours.
Really?
Yes. We had a fiscal problem before. You heard Trudeau a number of times, and I think he said it today as well, that we had a good bottom line, a good, we were good fiscally. We had strong banks and stuff like that. So when you have those kind of things, you have the flexibility of dealing with a crisis that comes your way initially. But if you're already weak in terms of the fiscal situation, which we were, and we were one of the weakest in the country as well, so when people talk about Alberta, going into a recession and those kind of things, the amount of debt they have per capita is low, right? And they can sustain a lot of things before they have to deal with the same situation we have to deal with, right? I would think that we're probably in the worst situation. New Brunswick is close, but I think we're probably worse than there. Our debt's gone up, and just so we bring it on the table, right now the full effects or any of the effects of Muscat Falls on provincial debt and borrowing, certainly provincial debt, as implicates for the fiscal situation, has not yet been felt. And the issue around mitigation of Muscat Falls rates are not yet resolved. And so you may see another fiscal implication of that, or you may see implications for rates, but it's hard to envision how you can keep 13.5 cents as a target for any period of time whatsoever. And it's not clear where the money comes from. And it's harder for the federal government now to step in and help, because they've just put a whole pot of money into the economy and are going to have to deal with that at some point in the future as well. So
prior
I think we're probably the worst.
Prior to all of this, there was some talk and questions raised about whether or not we would be heading down the road towards bankruptcy. Is that a real possibility once all is said and done?
Certainly is a more likely possibility now than it was before. That's why I said at the start of the interview that it is important for Mr. Osmond to convince Mr. Morneau that we can't survive without some federal support to deal with the situation in the short term.
You acknowledged early on that economy, or being an economist, is part of being part of the dismal sciences. Is there any bright light here? Is there any hope? I mean, does it help to know that everyone is more or less in the same boat?
We can commiserate, but everyone's not in the same boat. I mean, everyone is exposed to the risk of the virus and that on their economy. But we particularly had a weakened situation before this, and the price of oil has fallen for other reasons as well as the impact of the virus. And we're really dependent on oil. And so we will likely in the near future, depending where price goes to, see a substantial drop in the amount of revenue that we'll collect in terms of royalties.
So what's the greatest problem here, that we seem to have all those eggs in that oil basket, or that we have a difficult, we had a serious debt situation prior to this, or what's really at issue here? Would a more diversified economy have, you know, buffered us a little bit more?
It would have helped us with the fall in the price of oil, but again, we would have had a lower standard of living as well. What we need to be doing is, as opposed to making arguments about diversification, if there are opportunities to grow the economy in tourism or in technology or in fisheries or in other resources, we should take full advantage of those if they are available. But, you know, I mean, those are easier said than done. I mean, if there are obvious examples where we could grow the economy, diversify the economy, it would be done, right? So there are, it is important to try to look at these things through a realistic lens and think about what you can realistically do, or reasonably do, in a sustainable way. We know from people outside, in terms of expertise, they have indicated to us that the fiscal situation was unsustainable before any of this stuff happened. And so whatever problems were there before, they're just made worse by the current situation. So what needs to happen is the government needs to go talk to someone like Pat Parfrey and people like that who understand how to do smarter health. Pat Parfrey is the Choosing Wisely plan, and I can't remember the name of the other company, but they do understand healthcare. Healthcare is a big important issue. We have an aging population as well, just to throw all that together, right? So that has implications for cost. It has implications for revenue. So that hasn't gone away. That's still there. So I think what needs to happen is that whoever is government, whoever is leading the government, ought to take a serious, sober look at what can be done, not in the first 2 or 3 years, but over a longer period of time. So after 2 or 3 years, what do we need to do now from that period of time onwards, realistically, given the revenue flows that we got, the expenditure responsibilities we have? And it is easy to say this because we have an old aging population. That's not simply the reason. Lots of people have aging population. We just happen to have a bigger one. That's correct. And that will have implications for healthcare and a number of things like that. It is not also true that it is due to a dispersed geographical population. There is no actual studies that have looked at that, or none that are publicly available that people can look at. So it is an easy thing to say. It is questionable whether or not it has, whether or not it's the actual fact. But you don't need to look for scapegoats. You need to say, okay, we have a real situation now. How do we deal with it reasonably and without causing undue harm and damage to individuals who are less able to cope with it?
Dr. Wade Locke, we're out of time, but I really appreciate your input on all of this. Thank you very much, and stay well.
You too. Thank you very much. Bye.
Dr. Wade Locke, a Memorial University economist, my guest today on Target St. John's. We'll be back tomorrow at the same time, immediately following the Prime Minister's address.